You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, and we are proud to be partnered with Interstate Batteries. If you haven't visited your local Interstate Battery retail store to talk with a specialist about all your battery needs, you need to stop in. They have everything from batteries for your trail cameras, batteries for your rangefinders, batteries for your trucks, and everything in between. They have a battery for it. You can also go to find out more about the company and more about the batteries that they offer to interstatebatteries.com. This is a great company, a trustworthy company that has been around for several years. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. I'm your host, Parker McDonald. This is episode number 50. Today, we're talking about Florida public land deer hunting with our buddy Nick Chandler of Florida. We're going to talk about how he has been successful already this season multiple times in the woods there on public land in the state of Florida, as well as a very interesting story that happened to him on the biggest buck of his life. Stay tuned. This is the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. I'm excited to be here today. It feels like it's been a while since we recorded a podcast, even though I know it hasn't. Today I'm really excited about the episode because we're talking to Nick Chandler of Florida. And if you know me, if you've listened to the podcast much at all, you know that I have a little bit of an infatuation with hunting in Florida. And anytime somebody tells me that they were successful on public land in Florida, it really gets me fired up because I have hunted Florida once and realized that it was probably one of the more difficult states in the United States to hunt. And when I hear guys who are getting it done out there, it really fires me up. They're obviously doing something right. And our buddy Nick today has had multiple encounters with really good bucks on public land already this year. And right now we're sitting, it's October 9th as I'm recording this, and he has already been successful several times in the woods. And there's a really good story in this, and I don't want to give it away, and it can't be talked about too terribly much, but it's really interesting, and it's somewhat controversial of a situation that happened with Nick on the biggest buck of his life. And it just happened, I think, last week. So we're going to talk about that just a little bit, as much as we can. There's still some things getting hashed out on it, and I'm sure he'll tell us all about that. If you don't hear anything about it, it is because he told me beforehand. I haven't recorded this episode, by the way. So I'm about to record with him here in just a few minutes. And he told me that he may not get to talk about it because there's some legal things with just a situation that happened. And so if we don't get into that, it is because it wasn't allowed. But I'm telling you about it now just in case we do talk about it, because it's super interesting and I think you guys will enjoy it. So we're in the middle of deer season now. Alabama has not opened yet. I'm going to Kentucky tomorrow. As I'm recording this, I'm going, not Kentucky, I keep saying Kentucky, I don't mean Kentucky, I mean Tennessee. I'm going to Tennessee tomorrow, and really excited about that. I have not been in the woods since I missed the deer a couple weeks ago, and so I've been kind of jonesing a little bit. My wife gave me the okay to go to Tennessee tomorrow, so I'm going to get up about 1:30 in the morning. That is less than 12 hours from now, and I'm going to go deer hunt, so it's going to be a good time. Hopefully we get some video of that. If anything exciting happens, you can check it out on the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel. Man, thank you guys so much who have already subscribed to that channel. It's growing rapidly. Right now, it's growing by about 350 subscribers per month, which is pretty stinking cool. And that's all you guys, and I really do appreciate that. Thank you so much for checking that out. As always, you can check us out on Facebook at Southern Ground Hunting and on Instagram at Southern Ground Hunting. If you want to know more about what's going on in the world of Southern Ground Hunting, it is about to get fired up. It's about to get started heavy. Next week is the opening week of Alabama season, and we're going to be in the woods as much as I possibly can be, and I'm pretty excited about it. So that is going to be about it. Let's get into this episode with Mr. Nick Chandler. All right, on the line now, I've got my buddy Nick Chandler from Florida, who has had a killer season already. We're sitting here on October 9th, and he's already got a ton of stories to tell. Nick, how's it going, buddy?
Good, Parker. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm really excited to talk about your season because just in our few Facebook messages that we've had, man, it sounds like you've had a heck of a season already.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes, sir.
That's
for sure.
That's cool, man. That's cool. So, Nick, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're at, kind of your style of hunting, and I don't know, just whatever you feel like is necessary for our listeners to know who Nick Chandler is.
Okay. Well, like you said, my name's Nick Chandler. I'm from Central Florida, live in a little town called Umatilla. Lived here my whole life as far as the Central Florida region. I'm a carpenter, welder by trade for a restaurant company out of Orlando. Been there for about 10 years. I'm an avid bow hunter, deer hunter in general, fisherman, just about anything outdoors. Got a big passion for whitetail. And as you know, down here in Florida, the whitetail, they're a whole different animal.
Yeah.
But definitely anytime from the mid-September to January, February, that's usually what I'll be doing, something, you know, deer hunting related. Yeah, I mean, that's
all you need to know.
As far as
I mean, that's all anybody needs to know. I like to deer hunt. That's pretty much everybody who we have on this podcast. That's pretty much what it ends with. And I like to deer hunt. That's about it.
Yes,
Nick,
sir.
Are you from Florida originally?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Born in Apopka, Florida.
Okay. So, that's the thing about Florida. Like my wife is from Florida, and a lot of our listeners know that. That's why I've hunted Florida a little bit, and I plan to hunt it a whole lot throughout the rest of my life. But in Florida, finding guys like yourself who are as hardcore into this style of deer hunting. Now, I say this style because there's several different styles. You've got dog hunters in Florida. You have got, you know, the weekend warrior type deer hunters in Florida. And then you have the hardcore deer hunters that are like yourself, who are, you know, paying attention to things like the hunting beast or even like saddle hunting that's coming out. Just those hardcore guys who are the majority of the guys that are listening to this podcast are those kind of guys. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with any of those types of hunters that I mentioned. But how did you, Nick, get into this style? What was your evolution as a deer hunter from when you first started?
Well, I mean, I've been around in or around it ever since I could say I was probably before I was born. But I mean, I've just always intrigued me just the deer in general. As I was a kid, watching my dad bring them home, you know, and getting to touch them and experience the whole, you know, dressing process and everything like that. And I grew up dog hunting. You know, it was a big family tradition of mine, and actually still is with a lot of my family members. Aunts, uncles, all, you know, cousins, they all still run the woods up in Ocala and in that area running dogs. That's a fun deal in itself. But me and my dad kind of evolved into some still hunting years ago. I was probably about, you know, 10, 12 years old. Just started doing a lot more still hunting and getting a lot better quality deer. And then as I got older, I kind of got out of it for a while, as I'm sure a lot of us do. You know, you have start having kids and going through that stage, but then,
well, let's talk about that. So my stage was trying to find a girl worth marrying. That's when I got out of it. And I know a lot of guys, like, you get into that, like, older high school and college age, and it's like, I'm going to stop deer hunting because I've got to find a good lady. And that was
right.
Kind of my deal. That was when I stopped.
Right. Yeah, that was kind of just something else. Yeah, it was, that was a little bit more interesting at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder why that is. I wonder what changes in our mind.
Yeah, you never know. But, eventually, I think it was one day my dad had a a quota hunt, and he's like, "Oh, son, you want to go for?" You know, it'd been, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, and I said, "Yeah, sure, Dad." You know, so I ran to Walmart and I got, you know, just whatever I needed because I hadn't been in so long. I didn't have any clothes. I didn't have anything. So I ran and grabbed a backpack, some clothes, and just a, you know, a grunt tube, and you know, luckily I still have O from several years ago, but you know, so we went, and it was the first morning. A doe and a little buck came in, and then I ended up getting a decent shot on her, and then out jumps this monster buck, chases her off as she runs. I'm like, man, and that just got me right back into it. Just reeled me right back in.
That'll do it. That'll do it every time.
That's for sure. Yeah, I don't think I've seen a deer for 3 or 4 hunts after that.
Yeah.
But I wasn't giving up, that's for sure.
Yeah, dude, that's pretty cool. It always seems like it happens like that. So I used to be a golfer back when I was like younger and in high school and stuff, and I would not play for a really long time, and then I'd get an itch and I'd go out and play golf, and I would shoot my best round of golf ever, and I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm back into golf now. And then I'd play again, and I'd suck it up for the rest of the time. Then I'd quit. That was kind of always how it worked.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So you shoot this, doe. So you shot a doe and a good buck that day.
No. He jumped out, and before I could get another arrow,
okay,
he was already gone. He was trying to figure out where she went. I didn't have enough time. I was too starstruck at the moment he was standing there. It took me 3 or 4 seconds to kind of get myself together. And right. He's like, oh, well, I need to get another arrow and try to shoot this thing. But he was already gone by then.
Oh, wow. So how...
But just the experience in itself.
Oh, dude. You see a big buck like that, and all of a sudden, like, that passion, it just comes back every single time.
Oh, yeah.
It'll do it to you. So at this point, how old were you right here at that point?
I was about 23, 24.
And how old are you now?
29.
So this past, whatever, half decade, 7 years, 6 or 7 years has been just kind of devoted to getting better as a deer hunter. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. Pretty much. I mean, like I said, I got back into it, and then it was like, I'm not seeing much. It's kind of back to when I was younger, just not seeing much, you know, it's typical Florida, you know, you don't see a whole lot majority of the time. And I just knew there's gotta be a better way to figure these deer out. You know, there's gotta be some type of pattern. There's gotta be some type of easier way than lugging this heavy climbing tree stand around and not seeing anything majority of the time. And you talk to everybody, oh, you know, what'd you see? Oh, nothing. What'd you see? Oh yeah, pretty much same thing. Maybe his little doe came by, that's about it. So it's like, man, there's gotta be a science to this. There's some kind of way I could figure something out. And then, you know, just coming across podcasts and videos, just trying to figure something out. You know, you got the beast and everything like that, and start trying to relay that to Florida. It's not going to be the same, but you know, you can still kind of use some of the things to kind of help you get a better idea. And it's helped a lot. I mean, that's for sure.
Yeah. And you know, here's the thing is that you notice, and I've really been paying attention to this. The more states that I hunt and kind of thinking back to past hunts before I got into this more, you know, I was raised in West Texas where you hunt over corn feeders and things like that. Like that's just how I was raised. And not that that's bad. It's not wrong. It's legal there. And anytime I go back to Texas, there's a good chance I'm going to hunt over a corn feeder again.
Oh yeah.
But then you start learning things about a whitetail, and while mm-hmm. they are a different animal, you know, from state to state, they have different I don't know, their surroundings are different. They are still the same animal. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times right. most of the time they'll do the same thing because that's just who they are as an animal. I've noticed there's a high fenced enclosure right close to where I work at, and I pass by it every day, and they've got like a 90-acre hunting preserve is what they call it. And across the road, they have like a 14, 10, 10 or 15, something like that acre, breeding pen in that. And you can see it from the road, and it's got about, 10 does in it. and one just like giant 200 class, 2.5-year-old is what the lady told me when I stopped and talked to her one day. and you know, people who are listening to this have different opinions on all that stuff, but that's not really the point I'm trying to make. What I've noticed is when I drive by it, and I make a point to drive by it as much as I can, because I don't care what kind of deer hunter you are, seeing a 200-inch whitetail is amazing, no matter how he got to be 200 inches. It's amazing to see that guy up there. And what I've noticed is where he beds at, and you can see it just from the road. You can stop and pull over and watch him. The way that he beds is almost perfect for what we learn on the Hunting Beast as far as hill country tactics. The stuff that Dan is, you know, just really driving home. This buck will bed on like 2/3 up the way up this hill. On that mm-hmm. top third, he'll bed somewhere up there, and he'll look out over everything else that's below right. him. And
right.
I mean, and it's amazing to watch him. And he has. I would like to walk into that pen and find that bed in there, and see how worn down it is, because it's like every single time that I drive by there, he's bedded right there in that same spot. And I say that to say that, kind of what you said, you know. A lot of the stuff that gets talked about by Midwestern guys is completely different from our style of hunting down here in the South, but
mm-hmm.
they will do similar things. And what you're doing
right.
when you do that, when you start to put the pieces of the puzzle together, is you're just learning whitetails. You're learning their habits, and whether it's, you know, farm country or swamp or hill country or whatever it is, like, they all can be put into a the same category, because they are still whitetail deer. And so
right.
so where you're hunting at there in Florida, you said it's Central Florida?
Yep.
So is mm-hmm. it, are you mostly hunting like the swamps?
Well, it's more or less, I hunt a lot of swamps, but usually I'm hunting just outside of swamps on transition areas, or just trying to find other areas with a lot of food sources or a lot of plenty of cover is one of the biggest things. I mean, these big bucks around here, they're when you say skittish deer, you know, pressured deer in Michigan, I just don't think it. I don't think they could be any more pressured than, or as far as smart and keen as they are down here. I mean, any little. It's I've never seen anything like it. I mean, I mean, I'm hunting a lot of open, but yet thick cover.
Yeah.
But as far as the swamp goes, the swamps, it just, when you get down in the swamps, there's nothing to really funnel the deer in one specific spot. I mean, it's kind of like you sit all season, you might see a few, or you might get lucky and one might come by, but it's kind of like mono woods where it's just all the same. There's not really anything drawing them to, I mean, you might find something in there somewhere, a high spot with a good oak tree or something like that. But I have a lot more luck just finding other areas on higher ground where they're going to funnel and be up on the edge and you know, and that kind of, sort of thing.
Yeah, and the truth is a lot of the swamp tactics that get talked about a lot are they're different than what a Southerner thinks of. When I think of a swamp, I think of like Gators, Louisiana, duck hunting territory. Like, that's what I think of. And that's similar to what you're hunting, you know, around what you're hunting there. Whereas a lot of the content that's being pushed out about swamps and marshes is different than what we're talking about. And so a lot of our listeners, and believe it or not, we have a ton of listeners that are around Michigan, and it is easy to, whenever I hear Dan Infault talk about swamp bedding, I just have to understand that what he's talking about is a little bit different than what the swamp that we're talking about in the South actually is. Mm-hmm. And so what you're saying is something that I noticed big time whenever I was there, is that, you know, a lot of those big swampy areas, they don't offer anything for the deer other than, I mean, they... Mm-hmm. They don't really have a lot of bedding in it. Usually it's swampy, and so there's not a whole lot of understory to it. There's not a lot of browse because nothing's been allowed to grow in there. And so a lot of what you're probably hunting is that high ground where stuff has the opportunity to grow, you know, and the acres have an opportunity to not fall straight into the water and rot immediately.
Exactly right.
So what are some of the things that you have really keyed in on? Obviously that higher ground, drier ground. What are some other things that you've keyed in on that have added to your success there?
Well, one big thing is just overlooked spots. I know that's talked about a lot. And having a good mobile setup, because 99% of people around me, they're using a climber. Majority everywhere. They're going to use a climber. There's so many straight trees here, but I've been able to find areas because, you know, the deer are going to be somewhere where everybody's not pounding the bushes, and there's not going to be a lot of people in these areas where there's nowhere to put a climber or some easy stand just to throw up either a ladder stand or whatever, and they're not going to go very far off the road with a ladder stand. But as far as having either a lock-on, I started out using a lock-on about two or three seasons ago, and that just in itself put me on top of a lot more deer, being able to just, for one, being more cover, for two, you know, have a better setup, not be trying to find the right tree. And then I started hunting out of a saddle this past, at the end of last season, but then really tried to get into the saddle game this, the beginning of this season. And it's paid off quite a bit. I mean, that alone has probably got me majority of the deer this year, just being able to try to stay concealed behind the tree. I mean, that's the ticket.
Well, and you know, the thing about the saddle is that there's multiple things. So you put saddle and lock on in, or hang on, or like the lone wolf style of stand. They can be put in the same category in the fact that usually you can get in just about any tree that will support your weight.
Right.
My issues that I had with the lock on. I had bought an XOP Vanish last year just to try it out. And, it was when I was waiting on my saddle to get here and I really didn't want to get my climber out. I didn't want to take it. So I bought this XOP Vanish and, there was nothing quiet about it for me. There was nothing easy about it. By the time I got done hanging it and everything, I was wore slap out. And then carrying it was not way different than a climber. I mean, the weight of it was pretty much the same. The bulk of it was pretty much the same. I wasn't getting the advantage of that. And with the saddle,
right,
I switched to that. And I remember in Florida, I went into Florida blind one morning. I had no idea where I was going. I had no idea what the lay of the land was. I just knew I was in Florida and I had a license. And I put my saddle on and I just started walking, and I ended up walking probably a mile and a half, realizing this is just all swampy and I don't know how I'm even going to find a place to hunt. So I'll walk my butt back to the car and found another place. And like that was what I did that morning. And, but it was, if I had had my climber or something heavier on my back, dude, I would have probably wasted that whole morning. I would have just been like, screw it. I'm just going to hunt right here because I don't want to walk back to the truck and then try to find another spot with the climber, with the saddle. It was just that wasn't the case. And so,
oh yeah, exactly.
It does give you an advantage. I mean, it's easy to say that it's just a tool in the arsenal or whatever. But I cannot think of a single situation where my Mantis has not been a big part of the tactics associated with my deer hunting style. Like, it's huge.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's huge.
Definitely. Now, and there are some situations where a lock on, yeah, I can kind of get it into a little bit better situation as far as the tree and the setup and the amount of limbs and the cover and everything like that. But like you said, as far as the weight aspect to it, if you're especially not being familiar with the area, you're going in blind or you're just kind of doing a scout and hunt type situation, that's the ticket. I mean, that it doesn't get any better, any lighter than using a saddle. I mean, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So using it, being more mobile, that's one of the things. Mm-hmm. You mentioned transition areas or like transition lines. Let's talk about that for a second.
Right.
Because where I'm at, transition line is going to look like hardwoods and a pine thicket. So that kind of line that goes from hardwoods to pine thickets. What are you kind of keying in on there in Florida?
Well, specific areas I like to hunt. I like to hunt a lot of like the, you got palm flats where it's just nothing but like cabbage palms. And sometimes it'll be planted pines throughout the cabbage palms and hit hardwoods. And sometimes you can find like little corners that come up out of the swamp where the pine, like the planted pines kind of, they all kind of meet in one little corner and it just seems to just kind of draw the deer in, or there'll be old pond bottoms with hardwoods that kind of come to points and they almost touch in the center and you'll find them coming back and forth between there. And I mean, and then every once in a while, if you can get two or three different types of terrain coming together, that's deadly. That can be deadly. I mean, if you can find some scrapes throughout the oak hammocks and stuff like that, usually there's stuff moving through there.
Do you find that those areas are I guess for me, so a transition line for me is when I'm hunting them, I'm assuming if I haven't scouted the area, I'm assuming that they're going to be bedding in that thickest part of the transition. Is that kind of why you do that? And those lines kind of funnel them out of their bedding into their next, whatever feeding or whatever they're doing.
Right. Right. Yeah. And as far as the bedding goes, when it comes to thick, I mean, just about everything can, and certain areas can be pretty thick and at least thick enough to bed in. But yeah, I mean, I like to think that the more mature deer are going to be bedded in a little bit thicker areas. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, especially up in the cabbage palms and stuff like that, I've witnessed a lot of them kind of just stand up and come out of there. But yeah, definitely just, you know, you're never going to know exactly where they're going to be bedded. They could be bedded anywhere pretty much. But I try to keep the bedding in mind when it comes to wind and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Just try to at least make sure you got that on your side.
So when you say cabbage palms, are you talking about like a palmetto flat type area?
I guess I said cabbage palms, but yeah, I mean palmetto flat. Shorter, not very high off the ground. You usually stand up and see somebody. You know what I'm saying? It's not above your head, but a lot of times it might be above the deer's head, but they feel comfortable enough. I mean, and there's so many numbers around here with the cabbage palms and the pine trees. I mean, they're just about everywhere.
Yeah, that's one thing that I noticed whenever I was there. The last day that I was there, and I actually locked my keys in my car that day, and it was just a terrible day, honestly. But it was my last day of hunting in Florida, and I was there in Central Florida on public land, and the spot that I ended up finding was pines. There was a corner of pines, and then some. I don't know. I really don't even know what they were. It was just like a really skinny, really branchy tree. And it was Christmas time, so all the leaves were gone off of them. And I'm not sure what they were, but there was swamp. It was like swamp, just water inside of it in those woods. And then on both sides of those, there was those palmetto flats or cabbage palms, just that area that you're talking about. And I didn't see anything that morning, but as I got down and started walking, I started really finding kind of what you're talking about to be true. I was finding these trails that were really crossing and coming together right in those transition lines, right where everything was kind of meeting. And, you know, and I think that's true, man. Like, I think it's true for anywhere where you're at. You know, if you're in farm country, a lot of your heaviest trails are going to be, you know, right where those fields meet the woods, or when those thickets meet hardwoods. And then you just kind of have to figure out what it is for your area. So, you know, you're talking to a guy who right now I'm in North Alabama, where my transition lines are going to be a whole lot different than yours. But the truth still remains that these animals, they like the most diversity that they can possibly get.
Right.
And because each of those things offers the deer something different.
Exactly.
And they need all of those things. So finding those areas where those come together can be a really good spot for your setup. So, So that's kind of your style. I would imagine that that kind of covers a lot of the way that you hunt. Let's mm-hmm. talk about this season. When does the season open up there in Florida or where you're at?
It actually opened up September 14th in my zone. You know, see, Florida has, I think, four different zones. Mm-hmm. And my particular zone where I hunt majority of the time, Zone C. And it opens September 14th, okay. Archery. Okay. And I had a quota hunt for the following weekend. And that was my first hunt this year.
Okay.
It was in the local WMA.
Okay. So beginning of September or mid-September, it is hot. Mm-hmm. I was in Kentucky about that time, and it was freaking hot. I can imagine it was hotter in Florida. What were the temperatures like on that hunt?
Well, we actually got lucky. We had sort of, I say, cool front. It was at 4 in the morning, 3 or 4 in the morning when we were out the truck about to get ready to go back there. It was in maybe 64, 65 degrees.
Oh, wow.
That's really good for mid-September here.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
as the day goes on, I mean, it was in the 90s, I'd say midday or so. But I mean, then you got the humidity on top of that. I mean, half the time you can't even sit there in a tree stand without sweating. It's about impossible.
Do you
when
find
you're covered in long sleeves?
Oh, dude, I know all about that life. Do you find that the deer, like, you know, in a place, let's just say a place like Kentucky where it does cool off, and you know, once the fall gets there, it's usually, you know, a good hunting weather. It's comfortable and stuff. In Florida, when I hunted there in December of last year, it was still freaking hot. Like, they don't, it doesn't ever really like get cold, where I was at. And I can imagine where you're at. It doesn't, you don't really get that type of weather often. Do you find that it affects the deer or that they just kind of are used to it? Obviously they're used to it because that's what they've known their whole life, but does it affect the way that they move?
I think it does. I mean, from my experience, I'm not no expert, but I mean, you definitely notice a big movement, a change when the temperature drops, and it does seem like you see a lot more deer in the more shaded areas or closer to river bottoms and stuff when it's hotter because the temperature is so much more, you know, it's a lot cooler down in there. Mm-hmm. But the movement on these hot days, just it's. Sometimes I don't know how many sets I've sat and just seen nothing all day. I've done all day sits, midday sits, just anything. I mean, you just don't see a lot of deer during the day, but as soon as that sun goes behind that tree line, they're definitely moving then.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah. All right. So you do this quota hunt. Let's talk about the first quota hunt that you did. I guess mm-hmm. it was the weekend after the opener there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So is this one where you had to like put in super early, or is it one? I know when I was there, the quota was just whoever gets to the gate first and gets the whatever the ticket to get in there.
Yeah. These are like this particular area. This is a lottery draw that you do have to put in the beginning of the year, and they only have pass out so many permits. It's like a lottery system, like I was saying. And it was actually my cousin's permit. So you could bring a guest on majority of the WMAs around here. Mm-hmm. You could bring, you know, you and a guest. So he decided to bring me and, just a second. Thank you. And, we had this trip planned out. We had some presets earlier in the season, set some cameras, stuff like that. Kind of had an idea. I hadn't hunted this area a whole lot, but the first morning went okay, seen a few does, and then I decided to move. Ended up finding a really good transition area where a strip of oaks kind of went through the middle of some planted pines and kind of right into the swamp. It had about 15 or 20 scrapes. I had never seen anything like this in my life.
Wow.
In one little area, 15 or 20 scrapes all around these oaks. So I decided to sit there in my saddle. And I ended up having two good bucks come in in the moonlight first morning. I sat there. I mean, I couldn't exactly see the rack. I mean, in the moonlight, it was about half moon, But there were definitely some, you know, a couple of good mature deer. And then I decided to sit there again the next morning and had a nice 80-inch or so buck, which is a pretty good buck around here.
Mm-hmm.
And
definitely.
I got a pretty good shot off on him. He dropped too much, unfortunately, wasn't able to find him. But as I'm on the phone with my dad telling him about it, I think it must have been 5 minutes after I shot this deer, a six-point comes walking through. I get off.
Are you there?
He walks out and stands in the spot as the other one. Ended up shooting him too. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, you broke out like right when you said a six-point came through, and that was it.
Okay. Sorry, man. Yeah, yeah. So it was about 5 or 10 minutes after I shoot this pretty decent 80-90-inch buck, and he runs off. I mean, the crazy thing about this story is he dropped to the ground. I mean, it hit him on, like, I want to say underneath the spine, like on the bottom side of the spine. He hit the ground. He's paralyzed. He can only move, like, one leg. He's doing circles on the ground. I mean, I got this all on video. He was doing circles, and then all of a sudden, he kind of starts crawling off, and he gets up and trots off. I'd never seen anything like that.
Wow.
Well, so I wasn't sure if I was going to get this deer or not. So then here comes this little six-point about 5 minutes later, and he's standing right in the same shooting lane. I'm like, well, you know, got to fill a tag somehow.
Right.
But ended up finding he only went about 40, 50 yards, that deer did, but never did find the other one. And that was the end of the first hunt. Actually, wow. My cousin did end up filling the other tag. He shot a pretty decent six-point on, I think it was like the last night of that hunt.
Wow.
So it wasn't a bad one.
So what are the laws as far as that goes in Florida? Can you shoot multiple bucks a day?
Well, it depends on the management area. This particular management area had you could shoot two deer, and it could be two does, two bucks, or a buck and a doe. Just depends on what you want to do.
Okay.
But this one, this one we had two tags to fill.
That's
between the two of us.
That's pretty cool. So you kill this 6 point on the opening week, or I guess the week after mm-hmm. the opening week, and mm-hmm. and that's a pretty big deal there in Florida. I have a question about your quota though. So, I've talked to another guy that's around that same area. His name's Peter Updike. And, mm-hmm. We had a good conversation about this, about how some of these quota hunts are, they're sought after. And it makes you feel like just because it's a quota hunt, that you have a better opportunity of killing a deer, but that's not always the case. The reason there's a quota is because maybe it has less of a deer population and they're trying to protect that a little bit. Do you find that to be the case there, or do you find it to be that those quota areas are usually the better hunts?
Yeah, I listened to that podcast, which was a good one, by the way. And I don't know. I've always had really good luck on these quota permits. I mean, it is nothing like regular walk-on is what we call it. All you need to hunt and license, and you know, you can go Ocala, Green Swamp, all those areas.
Mm-hmm.
These you actually have to draw the hunt for. They're always a lot better. There might not be as good as a deer population, but they're not near as pressured.
Mm.
I've always had a lot better luck on the quota hunts.
Yeah. And that was going to be my next question is what is the pressure like on those type of hunts?
It's more or less, I guess best way to say it is it's small amounts of high pressure versus just steady pressure all season.
Right.
And in a way it's good, and it can be bad for some of the good bucks because, you know, there's nobody there all year. Then all of a sudden, bam, there's 50 people in this one area.
Right.
And they're like, okay, what's going on here? You know? So, I mean, other than the occasional person that might scout here and there, but
yeah.
Usually, you know, the day they allow you the day before the hunt to come in there and put stands up, you know, so there's a bunch of people running around putting up stands the day before the hunt, and the deer are like, oh, well, we're going to get out of here now.
Yeah.
So it can be bad for you in a way. But.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So, do they let you go in and scout beforehand? Can you scout as much as you want?
Yeah, but majority of them, one particular one that I hunt, the gate's always closed. So if you do, and you hunt a particular area that's farther back, you got a long hike or a bike ride to get back there.
Yeah.
So, it can be, you know, some of them do allow you to get a combination to the gate, and you can actually drive in and scout, you know, anytime throughout the year. But some of them, you have to just pretty much drive in from the front gate.
Wow. Yeah, that's similar to what ours is. A lot of the places out here, you can scout, but they're going to close a lot of the gates off to where you can't really get in there, which is fine. I mean, so it sounds like kind of what you did in this particular situation was you used being mobile to your advantage. You weren't going in there and hanging ladder stands and all this stuff. You were being a mobile deer hunter, and it paid off for you. You found this area with all these scrapes and set up on it.
Definitely. Just using the most recent info.
That's
trying to find the fresh time.
Man, that's the more and more that I get into this and the more people that I talk to that are being successful like yourself on public land, especially in these high pressure areas, the ability to stay mobile has been probably the most constant or most common denominator that I've seen in people who continue to be successful season after season. And it sounds like to me, you know, your certain scenario, it's a perfect example of in-season scouting. You find an area, you set up on it as soon as you find it. And man, what was that like? Four bucks that you saw that day, or five?
What, in this first hunt?
Well, I guess it wasn't that day. You had two different sits on that, so you saw $4 or $5 in that spot. Is that right?
I think I've probably seen more than that throughout the 2 or 3 days I was in that area. I mean, I had 4 points, spikes come through, just checking scrapes,
wow,
and stuff like that. But yeah, I would say, $5 or $6 in just that one little spot. Just and not only just being mobile, but being able to set up in just about any tree, because you might find a good spot, but the only tree you can put a climber on, it's not good for your wind, or you won't have a good shot advantage. You know, you pretty much just find just about the perfect spot, right amount of cover, right amount of shooting lanes, good on your wind and everything like that. That's definitely the ticket.
Wow, man, that sounds like it was a good trip, but that's not the end of your season so far. Let's talk about your next trip after that one. So you shot your 6 point. What did you do after that?
Okay, yeah, I've had another archery hunt and another. This is a different WMA, not too far away from the previous one. It's actually an area that I hunt a lot. This is pretty much the main area that I hunt. I spend a lot and put a majority of my time into a lot of summertime scouting. And I have an electric bike, and we're allowed to use those here, the pedal assist, which helps a lot as far as the gate being closed issue. But I ride back there several times throughout, sometimes once a week, throughout the summer and the off season, between shed hunting and just it's about anything. And I even got stands. I'll bring stands and do like, I'll even go out there before daylight and sit and watch, just trying to figure out deer patterns, just try to see, where what they're feeding on, especially once it comes closer to the season. I'll try to just, kind of do like what they say on the beast. It's what do they call it? Observation sits.
Yeah. Observation.
Just try to see the deer movement and then see where they're moving through, and then just get an eye on where the local, like the best food sources are, heavy crossings and stuff like that. But this is, this hunt, I kind of had a spot that I had found throughout the summer. It was a persimmon patch, and it had a heavy, heavy crossing coming to and from the persimmon patch. And I kind of went out on a whim. I didn't think it was going to be that great. I had a couple other spots, but I went in there blind the first morning of this hunt, and I had a nice mature. I had to set up my camera gear, put this, my sticks and predator platform, get everything set up. And by then, I'm 10 minutes before daylight. I got in there like super early. And anyways, I had this nice mature buck walk through there, through a shooting lane, but just didn't have enough time to grab my bow and get everything set up. And ended up having a couple other decent deer walk through there. But the last day of that hunt, the wind was about perfect and had this nice, 70-inch buck come up out of the palmetto flat behind me, and watched him for about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, just tearing up some rubs, just going to town on everything he was walking by. And then eventually he walked his way out, but he was just from using milkweed. I mean, I knew right about where he was going to hit my scent. Luckily, being in the saddle, I was able to turn, kind of bend way over and twist around. I mean, I don't even know how I'd been able to shoot it any other way because I had so much cover around me. I had to bend way down to get up to shoot underneath it. I was able to make a pretty good, I think it was about 15-yard shot on this deer. That was the second deer of the season.
Wow. So you're here at like less than a month into the season, and you've already shot three times and recovered two bucks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not from Florida. I don't go to Florida a lot. I go there a little bit. I don't know a whole lot of people that are doing that. Now, I do know one guy, Chase Prince from Chasing Tales podcast.
Right.
I don't know if you're familiar with that podcast, but those mm-hmm. guys are buddies of mine, and he's killed two bucks already. One just
right.
straight up slammer that he killed on public land a couple weeks ago. So he's
oh,
one of
nice.
The, yeah, it's a good buck, but there's not just a ton of people that are having that kind of luck in Florida, especially
right.
during bow season. So,
that's for sure.
So at this point, are all your friends like, dude, I gotta go hunt with you. Like, I gotta get some of your good luck.
Oh, I've heard it. I mean, they're trying to find the horseshoe still to this day.
what did Walter Lee told me something? He said, he's got a lucky horseshoe. Chase has got a lucky horseshoe up his butt or something like that.
That's something about what they were telling me. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's about
so it doesn't end there, right?
No.
The luck doesn't run out per se. So you shoot this buck, and what was this the buck that you just maybe a couple weeks ago that you shot? You sent me in a message or something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah, it was actually I want to say the 29th, September 29th. It was on a Sunday evening, and I almost didn't even hunt the evening. I mean, I got to get ready for work in the morning. I got all this stuff to do, get back home, unpack hunting stuff, all this stuff. And I said, you know what? I think I need to go back. And yeah, that was on the evening.
Okay.
And so I had the next archery hunt in the same WMA. And so after killing that deer on the last day of that hunt, I ended up just taking my bottom two sticks down and leaving my stand for the next hunt. I said, I'll just come back in here in the morning. I'm sure it probably won't be worth much. You know, I done killed a deer, put all my scent in the area, dragging the deer, taking pictures and doing all this stuff. I'm like, you know, it won't, maybe I'll just give it another shot. You know, this persimmon tree kind of seems pretty hot. I've done seen seven or eight deer come through here checking on persimmons, you know, like I'll give it a shot. So jump to the following weekend, Friday morning, I sneak in there, put my sticks on the tree, get up to my platform, get my camera gear set up. I'm sitting there. I mean, it took me quite a while. I think I got done 10, 15 minutes before daylight, getting my camera set up and everything. Turn my light off. I get settled down, trying to, you know, cool down a little bit, keep from sweating as much.
Yeah.
And then about that time, all I can hear is a deer run off blowing like crazy. I'm like, oh, man, well, here goes that hunt. I'm not going to see anything. Like, oh, well, you know, time, you know, it goes on. So I think about an hour after daylight or so, had a little spike come through, feeding along, got some pretty good footage of him. And then about 10 minutes later, I had this doe come walking up to the edge of the clearing. And so I grabbed my camera and I moved it around the tree. I thought, oh, it's some pretty good, you know, footage, B-roll footage, whatever. And something caught my eye in the same direction she came out of. And all I seen is just big, huge, swollen neck, 6-7 inch brow times, and nothing but rack. I mean, I don't even know how I kept it together near as good as I did. But you don't see that very often, even just to get a glance at it around here and actually
right.
have it. I mean, he was probably 25 yards at the time, just staring at the doe, watching the doe, making sure that you know, everything was good to go. The coast was clear. She fed around the persimmon tree, I don't know, it seemed like 2 hours, but, you know, it might have been 20, 30 seconds, and finally worked her way around towards me. And then she kind of went behind me, and I was a little worried because I had my bike hidden right underneath my tree, underneath some thick stuff. So this whole time, back in my head, I'm thinking, man, this doe is going to circle me, see me move, or see my bike or something in the bushes. I'm ready for her to just take off, and this buck be like, all right, forget it, I'm out of here. And finally, he decides to start working his way. So I have my camera already ready, set, hit record. I'm standing there with the bow. He's walking around, and I notice there's a pretty big, thick chunk of this is actual cabbage palms that's up high off the ground. It's kind of blocking his view from me. I can kind of see him working his way through there, so I go ahead and draw back so he doesn't catch that, because I knew if he followed the same exact path as that doe did, he was going to be at 10 yards from my tree, and I'm only about 10 feet off the ground. So it's really, really close to this deer, and this thing is highly, I don't want to say alert, because he didn't know I was there, but he was paying attention to everything. I mean, he took a long time before he walked out into the open. I mean, he was there for a while. I mean, you can see his nose working, his eyes, just big black beady eyes, just paying attention to every little sign that maybe might say, hey, something's not right here. So, I mean, I didn't want him to bust me. So I go ahead and draw back, and I hold it back the entire time, but he was walking a pretty good little speed. I waited till he got right about 10 yards. He started walking broadside. And the mistake I probably made was not stopping the deer. My thought in my head was, this deer is that old, this close. You know, if I make any noise, he's gone.
Right.
So I just tried to lead him a little bit, but he was one step a little bit too fast. I hit him a little too far back, and unfortunately, I wasn't able to find the deer.
Wow.
But
are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Sorry, okay. You went off. Seemed like you skipped out.
Yeah. Yeah, so you hit him a little bit far back. That's the last thing I heard, and you weren't able to find him. So
yeah.
So, well, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah. So I'm sitting here thinking I smoked this deer. I was like, you know what? It kind of seemed like it was a little far back. I figured, well, I'll get down in about 20, 30 minutes, and I'll just see what kind of blood I'm looking at. And, you know, so I waited, went down, checked the blood. I'm like, yeah, it just wasn't enough for me to think that I need to pursue chase, you know, trying to trail him. So I went ahead and I just took off to the truck and went and pulled up on the laptop, slowed it down, just kind of really get an idea on what I'm looking at. And it looked like it was decent, you know, maybe a little bit of the back lung, liver type shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then exit through the guts. He was kind of quartering towards me just a little bit. And then so I gave it about 2.5 to 3 hours, went back, tried to find my arrow, couldn't find the arrow. And then something, I was like, oh, well, you know what? We'll give it about another hour. We'll go eat some lunch. And just to be sure. And about that time is when I got a call, you know, somebody told me, oh, somebody, so-and-so that was, you know, parked back there, they just brought in a giant, you know, 115 inch buck. I'm thinking, oh man, I think my heart dropped to the floor at that point. So, I mean, this is the biggest deer I'd ever been in, you know, close range of, especially to shoot it with a bow. I mean, this would have been my first Florida registry. I've never shot anything even close to that size.
Wow.
So, I mean.
Yeah, that's, I mean, and so you sent me this video of this buck, and he's a good buck. Like, what did you say, like 115 inches or so?
Yeah, he grossed 115. He netted about 110 and 5/8 after deductions, but he's a 115 inch deer, and he was a 4.5-year-old, and they don't get that big around here.
Yeah.
Very often. I mean, at least in the area that I hunt in.
Yeah.
I know there are some other parts of Florida that do produce a little bit bigger racks, but this particular area, it's hard to even see one at a distance at that size.
Right. So here's the deal, and if I say anything that I don't need to say, then we will edit it out. But so you shoot this buck, less than desirable shot, but still a fatal shot, you know. A gut shot is going to be fatal just about every time. Get a call that somebody else has checked in a giant buck. and happens to look extremely similar to your buck that you shot that was hunting in the mm-hmm. same area, and to be continued. Is that kind of the
right?
That's kind of the the whole thing.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I kind of. That's pretty much it. That's about it.
Yeah.
At this point.
So at this point, that's going to be all that we say, and it's all that we're really able to say, because man, I want to see this story unfold, and dude, like that, I cannot imagine that type of feeling of seeing that and getting that kind of call of a guy that, you know, whatever, blah blah blah. But
right.
we're gonna keep everybody updated on this, because it's an interesting scenario. Have you ever heard of anything like this?
No, not at all. I've never had any. Well, actually, I take that back. I think my uncle had a situation happen. He was hunting on just the other side of a riverbank from somebody, and he ended up not being able to find it, and they checked it in. But this specific scenario, I've never.
Yeah.
This is a little bit different. It's got a lot more detail to it. That's for sure.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I think everybody listening to this would agree that we want to see you be able to get this deer. And here's the deal. Like, it is public land, and so there are certain things that happen on public land that are, you know, kind of crappy situations. This
right.
one. However, I'm interested to know kind of the legality of it, because, you know, like if I'm sitting there, if I'm a deer hunter and I see a buck, especially a buck of that quality, come walking up and maybe it's got a hole in it and it's bleeding, I'm probably still going to shoot it, because there's no
right.
telling, there's no telling when or where that deer was shot at. And if it's suffering, you want to kill it.
Right.
So there could have been that aspect to it.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of different things that can go into this, and I'm just interested to see how it all plays out. I know there's some more details in there that we can share maybe at a later date, but man,
right.
that is a heck of a season so far.
Oh yeah, definitely. And see, that's the thing. I mean, I would have no problem at all if that was the issue. Say it came by this person, he finished it off. Hey man, congratulations on your deer. That's fine. But the way it kind of laid out, played out, whatever, however it happened,
yeah.
That it's just way too shady.
Yeah,
that's all
I'm
gonna
say. It's not pointing to that type of situation.
No. I mean, how about, you know, hey man, you know, these people knew where I was hunting, they knew I was in the area. How about, hey, you know, I shot this deer that looks like somebody shot. Look, you know, there's no point in looking for it no more. Here's your, you know, just letting you know, we finished it off.
Yeah, so
simple, you know,
there's a similar situation of a guy that's from here, that's from Alabama. His name's Tyler, and he was hunting on the same area that I hunt. And this guy kills big deer out here, and not a lot of people do. And
mm-hmm.
he shot a toad, dude, like a giant deer. That was not, that he couldn't recover. Someone else recovered it within the next couple days, and did not give it back to him. They knew that he had shot it. They didn't claim that they had shot it. They claimed that they had just found this deer. He knew it was the same deer, and they did not give it back to him. They ended up European mounting it, and I think it was like 160, 170 inch deer. Big woods Alabama buck, and it, you know. Luckily, the guy shot the next day. He shot another giant, so it kind of softened the blow a little bit. But still, you know, that's a pretty rough thing to have happen. And I'm interested to see how it all plays out for you, man. That's
that's
pretty crazy. So in Florida, you get am I right that you get 3 buck tags in Florida?
No, the new law that just happened this year. That's what I originally thought it was going to be, but it's five deer, 2 can be antlerless. So if you want to shoot 5 bucks, you shoot 5 bucks. But if you want, you know, if you shoot a doe, then you're only down to 4 bucks. But you can only shoot 2 does.
Okay.
Antlerless.
I gotcha.
And that's private property, public, whatever, just in general. And for the, you know, until this year, you could shoot up to two deer a day all season long.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm curious to see. And I would be fine if it was only two or three deer, two or three bucks a year. I mean, that would really help a lot of the of the issues we have here already. I mean, as far as, you know, the amount of deer and the quality of deer.
Definitely. So, so obviously with this deer, this specific buck, you won't get the, you will probably never see the meat ever.
No, definitely not. I don't think I want to.
Yeah, it's just true. Will you, if you were to be able to get, if it were all to be resolved and you get this deer back, what is that, what does that look for as far as your tags, or do you even know?
I don't know, to be honest with you. That would all depend on just how it turns out. I really don't know.
Man.
Seems how it's going to be well after the hunt. So I really don't know, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Either way, it's fine with me. I will drop two tags for that deer, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's true.
You don't get very many. I mean, my dad's hunted. He's a good hunter. He's hunted his entire life, and he's only got two good Florida bucks that make the registry, which is anything over 100 inches around here.
Right.
So that ought to tell you something.
Definitely. Well, man, I'm going to keep everybody updated on this story, and I'm going to ask if you would just keep me updated on it. Like, that's a pretty big deal. And, man, it sounds like you've got Florida figured out. You know, maybe one day you lose that lucky horseshoe up your butt, but I'm going to venture out to say, with the amount of work that you put into it and the you know, being a student of the woods and a student of whitetails, it sounds like you are, that it's probably going to stay with you, and I'm super excited to watch it all unfold.
No, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, I'm hoping so myself.
Man,
that's for sure.
I wish you the best of luck through the rest of the season, and man, I hope you kill two more bucks just like that.
Same to you, Parker. I appreciate it, man. Same to you.
All right, guys, thank you so much again for listening to the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. As always, it was my pleasure to bring this to you. Big, huge shout-out to Nick Chandler for coming on the show and talking about that situation. So not only has he had a great season, he's had an interesting season. And we're going to be keeping up with this story that you heard about the buck that was not recovered last week. As it kind of unfolds, I'm going to be trying to update as much as I can for you guys who are interested in how that goes, but it's an unfortunate situation. Just goes to show that it really does pay off big time to just be a nice person when you're in the woods. This is an unfortunate deal, and man, it's I really hope the best comes out of it for Nick, and I know he worked hard for that buck, and I'm hoping it all works out for him. Yeah, that's gonna be it. I know you guys enjoy Florida content. We always get a lot of really good feedback whenever we talk about guys who, or when we talk to guys who have been successful in Florida. So I know you guys are gonna like this one. I know I sure enjoyed that conversation with Nick. Dude knows how to deer hunt, and he's doing it in probably the hardest state in the United States. If I had to guess, I would say Florida's probably the hardest state to hunt in the U.S., and the guy gets it done, man. So, check us out on Facebook, on Instagram, at Southern Ground Hunting. Check out the YouTube channel. I am, right now, as I'm recording this, I am about to leave and head to Tennessee. It is about almost 11 o'clock, and I'm just got done packing up, and I'm headed to Tennessee. I'm going to hunt all day tomorrow. It's only about an hour and a half from my house, so I'm going to hunt all day tomorrow, and hopefully come back with a deer. So if you are going to be out in the woods, remember that God gave you dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the beasts of the earth. So go out and exercise that dominion. We'll talk to you next time.